I wanna get locked up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and get rock on my on the only podcast that I'll hear. Rip off my ears. Oh, the rock show, 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 the rock show. Oh, I want the rock show.
Welcome to another show of The Rock Show, episode 181, and we talk about Mick Ronson. He passed away, right?
He's been dead 30 years.
Right? Yeah.
Just 30 years recently, at the end of April.
Yeah, he died like in 93 or something?
Yeah, April 93, passed away from liver cancer. Yeah. Very sad. He was in his 40s. I remember when that happened. Mick Ronson, also known as Rono.
Rono.
And what an amazing guitar player. So influential to what Bowie was doing. He's known for that era being with Bowie.
That's what I remember for Bowie.
Yeah.
Like playing with David Bowie. Like, that's it.
I mean, he's known mostly for that and for his work with Ian Hunter a little bit. And but he has some amazing solo stuff that I think people should listen to. Kind of like he was a very interesting guy, very blue collar. He came from Hull in England, which, you know, is not known for producing musicians, really. Okay, they're kind of a, I think they're like a shipping town or something like that. Okay, and on the water, I believe. And, you know, very blue collar. He has a very thick accent known to that area. He was a little tough to understand as far as even British accents go. You know, he spent time as a mechanic. He spent time in working for the parks department. He was kind of like a regular guy that just played music, you know, really good music. And he had a very distinctive sound, which I'll get into on how he did that particular sound. So let's get into the meat and potatoes here. And he was born May 26, 1946 in the Hull area of England. Like I said before, he was the first son of George and Minnie Ronson, and had two younger siblings, Maggie and David. His family were practicing Mormons, okay? And as a child, he was trained classically to play piano. He was also could play the recorder and the violin, and later on the harmonium, okay, which is kind of like an organ type thing. He initially wanted to play the cello. He was very interested in playing that, but once he heard Duane Eddy on the radio as a teenager, he said, nope, I want to play guitar. Okay.
And that's
so that happened probably when he was about 12 years old or something. Okay.
Yeah.
So at the age of 17, he joined his first band, which was called the Mariners. And this was November of 1963. And his stage debut with the band was in support of the popular Keith Heard Band at the Bro Village Hall. It was a gig that he traveled over 35 miles to get to and was only getting paid about 10 shillings for his performance, which isn't a lot of money. Now, while still with the Mariners, another local Hull band called the Crestas recruited him at the suggestion of the Mariners bass player, John Griffiths. The Crestas, while Ronson was in the band, gained a very solid reputation as a live act, often making appearances at local music halls in the area. The band performed live sometimes 3 to 4 days a week. So in 1965, Ronson left the Crestas and moved to London to find work. Now, he became a part-time mechanic. Okay, he knew how to do work with his hands. So he joined up with a band called The Voice. And soon afterwards, Crestas drummer Dave Bradfield traveled to London and also joined the band The Voice. Both of them replaced the existing guitarist and drummers respectively. And after playing a few gigs with The Voice, Bradfield and Ronson went home for the weekend. They decided to travel back to Hull for a weekend. Well, they were surprised, pretty much, when they got back the following weekday, I guess Monday, okay, that they found all their gear piled up in the apartment that they had, and The Voice had packed up and moved to the Bahamas. Never told them that they were going to do that. So, now Dave Bradfield returned to London, but returned to Hull, but Mick Ronson stayed on in London and teamed up briefly with a soul band called The Wanted before eventually kind of returning back to Hull himself. Now, in 66, he joined the Hull's top local band called The Rats, joining singer Benny Marshall, bassist Jeff Appleby, and drummer Jim Simpson. He would be replaced soon after by Clive Taylor and then John Cambridge. And that name would be very important. The group played the local circuits and made a few unsuccessful trips to London and Paris. Now, just as a side note, at this same time in 66, there's about 3 or 4 British bands called The Rats.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But this band with Mick Ronson was the most well-known and the most successful. In 67, the group recorded the one-off psychedelic track called The Rise and Fall of Bernie Gripplestone, and that was recorded at Fairview Studios in Yorkshire. It can be heard on a 2008 release called Front Room Masters, Fairview Studios 1966 through 1973, if you want to check out some very early Mick Ronson. In 1968, it saw the band briefly change their name from The Rats to the name Treacle. They would book Treacle, T-R-E-A-C-L-E. Yeah. They would book more studio time at Fairview under that name in about 1969. And then they would go back to the name The Rats that same year. Around this time, Ronson was recommended by musician Rick Kemp to play guitar on singer-songwriter Michael Chapman's Fully Qualified Survivor album. Okay, he plays on it. In 1968, Keith Ched Cheeseman joined the Rats, replacing Jeff Appleby on bass, and the lineup of Ronson, Marshall, Cheeseman, and Cambridge entered the Fairview studio to record Guitar Boogie, another track called Stop and Get a Hold of Myself, and also a track called Morning Dew. Now, when Cambridge left the Rats to join his former Hullabaloo's bandmate Mick Wayne in a band called Junior's Eyes, he was replaced then by Mick Woody Woodmansey. Okay. You might know that name from the Spiders from Mars, you know, Bowie's band. Okay.
Yeah.
He's the guy with the long silver sideburns. Okay. Okay. He plays bass. In November of 69, the band recorded a final session at Fairview, taping Telephone Blues and Early in Spring. In March of 1970, during the recording sessions for Elton John's album Tumbleweed Connection, Ronson played guitar for him on a track called Madman Across the Water. This version of the song would be shelved for over 20 years, okay? Until it was released on the 1992 compilation album called Rare Masters. It was also released as a 1995 and 2008 deluxe edition of Tumbleweed. Okay. And the album that came out after that by Elton John was actually called Madman Across the Water, But the title track for that was re-recorded with a guitarist named Davey Johnstone playing guitar. Ooh. So the Mick Ronson version recorded a year earlier for the album of the same name that came out a year later would not see the light of day for 20 years.
Okay? Wow.
And I've heard it, and it's better. It's just a different version of the song. I'm not giant Elton John fan, but I do know that I would have rather have seen him with Mick Ronson than Davey Johnstone. Wow. But that's just my opinion. Now, Mick Ronson was kind of feeling despondent at this time about his career. He really wasn't having the success that he thought he should be. It was around this time that he had gone back to Hull and was just working. Okay. He was thinking of giving up music altogether. John Cambridge, who had played with him, okay, paid him a visit, went all the way up to Hull. Hull is in the northeastern part of the UK, I believe. Okay, so it was quite a bit trip to go up there. Found him working for the Parks Department, okay? And when he found him, he was actually putting the marks on a rugby field, okay? A rugby field over there, they call it a pitch, okay? So he was marking the pitch. In other words, he was putting the baselines up and all that with the chalk and all that, you know?
Yeah.
So he finds him on this field doing this. Hull's big sport in Hull was rugby. Okay. So he was putting the field together for their big team. And Cambridge tells him about this guy named David Bowie, who is putting a new band together. And the backing band was going to be called The Hype. David Bowie and The Hype. Okay. This was around the time when Bowie had changed his name from Davy Jones, because Davy Jones of the Monkees was more popular. Yeah. His name. You know that story. And he became David Bowie, and he was releasing albums consistently under that name and Davy Jones too. And just they weren't really going anywhere. His career was kind of spinning, going in different directions. He hadn't really honed in on a sound yet. Okay. So Ronson was kind of reluctant. I think he knew who Bowie was, but you know, I don't think he thought much of him. But he agreed to meet him 2 days later. All right. And it was the same day that Bowie was supposed to appear on DJ John Peel's BBC Radio 1 show. Okay. John Peel, who we all know, we've talked about him many times, did a show on him, was a very influential DJ in England at the time for many years. And really, if you were on his show, you were probably going to be a star. So going on this show was a big deal for Bowie. He met with Ronson that day prior to the show, a few hours before the show, and they hit it off. They got along. Ronson really didn't know the music, but he kind of, from the way the story goes, is he kind of stayed a little bit in the back, okay, and was watching Bowie play and picked up on things right there, right on the John Peel show. He agreed to come on. He was right, you know, playing with them. It was the first time they ever played together. And Ronson had a talent. And you could see this in the documentary Beside Bowie, the Mick Ronson story, which is on YouTube. Check it out. you could see it there where Bowie explains how Ronson had a way of like just picking up things like this and being able to come up with something new right off the top of his head or follow him along. Okay. And what you'd see over the next few years with them together is they complemented each other in a way like, you know, Richards and Jagger or Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey, or, you know, anybody that's like that. Okay. You have these like people that complement each other, like a yin and a yang. They were kind of opposites. You had Mick Ronson, kind of like a very masculine dude. Okay. Even though he had the long hair, I mean, he was a total man's man playing guitar, chopping away at it the way he played. Okay. And then you had Bowie being, you know, doing his feminine kind of shit, which is great. Yeah. Okay. And you know, they complemented each other in many ways, not just musically, visually, all that, which you'd see so much in the following years. Now, after the Radio 1 show, exactly, the Hype played their first gig on February 22nd, 1970 at the Roundhouse with a lineup that included Bowie, Ronson, Cambridge, and producer slash bassist Tony Visconti. The group dressed up as superheroes for the gig. Bowie was Rainbow Man, Visconti was Hype Man, Ronson was Gangster Man, dressed up in a pinstripe suit, I think, as a gangster in a hat. Okay, and Cambridge was Cowboy Man. Now, also on the bill, also on the bill at the Roundhouse that day were Bach Denkel, the Groundhogs, and Caravan, three up-and-coming bands that kind of went into obscurity. But the following day, they did a gig under a pseudonym called Harry the Butcher at the Streatham Arms Hotel in London. They also performed on February 28th at the Basildon Arts Lab, if I'm saying that right, in Essex. And it was billed as David Bowie's new electric band. Okay. Also on that bill were High Tide, Overson, and the legendary Iron Butterfly. Okay. Who, in A Gotta Da Vida, you know that song. The Straubs was supposed to be on that gig, but bailed in the last minute. And that's how Bowie got on there. Now, Cambridge, John Cambridge, would leave the band in March and be replaced by Woody Woodmansey again, okay?
Yep.
In April, Ronson, Woodmansey, and Visconti started recording Bowie's new album, The Man Who Sold the World.
That's a great album.
Right. Now, during the sessions for The Man Who Sold the World, the trio of Ronson, Visconti, and Woodmansey, still under the name The Hype, signed themselves to Vertigo Records. The group recruited Benny Marshall from the Rats earlier as the vocalist and entered the studio to record an album. By the time a single appeared, The Hype had been renamed Rono, which was Ronson's nickname, and a single called Fourth Hour of My Sleep was released on Vertigo in January of 71. It was written by songwriter Tucker Zimmerman. And the B-side was a Ronson Benny Marshall composition called Powers of Darkness. The Rono album was actually shelved and never completed. The single bombed as well. Okay. They never got this off the ground. Now, Bowie's backing band, which now included Trevor Boulder on bass, he replaced Tony Visconti. Okay. Tony went on, I think at that time, to work with T-Rex and a few other people as a producer. Him and Bowie parted ways for a while. New keyboardist Rick Wakeman would be brought in, okay, on Bowie's new album being recorded, which was called Hunky Dory. Okay, another great album. The departure of Visconti also meant that Ronson, with Bowie, would take over the arrangements, while Ken Scott co-produced the record with Bowie himself. Hunky Dory featured Ronson's string arrangements on several tracks, including Life on Mars. Okay, great ballad. Yeah. One thing I got to mention, give me a second here, is that Ronson, like I said earlier, was classically trained. Okay. And he could play strings, cello, violin, all that. And he also knew how to make arrangements, which was how do you arrange these things into a song? Okay. Now, what's interesting is, despite his classical training, which was, it put him in a different category with a lot of guitarists. Okay. Despite that, he didn't know how to write music specifically. Okay. He could read music notes, but he didn't know how to write it out in arrangements. When you do arrangements, there's a way to do it. I'm not an expert, but I know that everybody's part has to be in a certain line on the arrangements when you're reading it. He didn't know how to do that. And Tony Visconti taught him how to do that. Okay. Wow. This would be very important to Ronson because it would be things he would fall back on doing arrangements for people for many years. Okay. After he left Bowie and stuff like that. There's also some people coming up we'll talk about that he did arrangements for, and he would write these things out. Okay. And the guy was like a super talent in so many different ways. Now this band, okay, minus Rick Wakeman, would morph into the Spiders from Mars, okay, which would be the name of the next album, Ziggy Stardust and the Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. On this album, he would do all the string arrangements and various instrumentations, as well as playing lead guitar. Now, it's important to mention two things. First of all, if you listen to The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust, which is one of the greatest albums of all time.
It is a great album.
I would put that in the top 10 anytime, anywhere. Okay. He has a distinctive sound on his guitar, and it would follow through everything else that he did. Okay. But it really comes through, I think, on this album more than anywhere else, where his guitar has this like honking, almost, he described it that way, sound. Okay. It sounds like nothing else. All right. And what he did to get it is he used a wah-wah pedal. He would put the amp, you know, play his guitar through a wah-wah pedal and just plug it into the amp. And he would take the pedal and keep it in like a half open position. All right, now I'm not a real guitar player. I can't tell you much more than that, but I know that that's how he got a lot of his sound doing this. So keeping in mind, guitar players out there listening, that's how you get the Rono sound, is you keep that wah-wah pedal open about halfway. If I'm wrong in any way, let me know. I got that actually from Ronson himself in the documentary. He says that, and I thought it'd be cool to pass that on. The other thing I got to mention is just how important this album was to the emerging punk scene that would happen three years later. Okay. You know, Ronson's guitar playing was totally influenced like Steve Jones and the Pistols. Johnny Thunders was even influenced over in America. All the Ramones, you know, all those great bands in the 70s were influenced by Bowie, okay, and Ronson's guitar. So in 72, Ronson also provided a strings and brass arrangement for the song Sea Diver on the Bowie-produced All the Young Dudes album for Mott the Hoople. Mott the Hoople, as you know, you might know the story. They'd been around for a few years, about to break up. Bowie finds out about this and says, no, don't break up. I'll produce your next album. I'll give you a song. I'll play this for you right now. What do you think of it? It was All the Young Dudes, which was something that he had written, performed it a little bit, and treated it almost like a throwaway. And he, you know, he gave it to them and they loved it. It was a song that Ian Hunter could sing. And it was this time that Ian Hunter and Ronson got to be friends. He did all the, you know, Ronson did all the arrangements on this album. It's an amazing record. Sea Diver has beautiful strings on it and everything like that. I've heard Hunter do this live, and it's beautiful. Okay. Wow. You can't get it exactly like the album because he needs like quite a few strings with him, but he performs it still to this day. And this was the beginning of the start of a bubbling working relationship between the two of them. Also that same year in 1972, Ronson and Bowie got involved with Lou Reed, and Bowie produced Lou Reed's Transformer album. Ronson plays lead guitar and piano and does all the string arrangements on Perfect Day, Satellite of Love. Okay. It's just beautifully recorded. He did all the string arrangements on that album altogether. Lou Reed is, you know, that began a relationship there between Lou Reed and Bowie that would continue off and on. And I think it's another one of the greatest records of all time. I mean, that 72-73 period for Bowie and Ronson and Lou Reed and Motley Crue. I mean, it's just such great music. It's timeless. Mm-hmm. Now, that same year with David Bowie, he re-recorded The Man Who Sold the World for British female artist Lulu. Okay. She did her own version of that. Ronson also played a few tracks for Dana Gillespie on her album, Weren't Born a Man. He appeared on the 1972 country rock album, Bustin' Out, by the band Pure Prairie League, and also did some string arrangements for them on that album. Now, he began recording a second solo album in 1972, recording the songs Angel Number 9 and Bolder Skies and Call Me, Tell Me. Okay. This time he was trying to get a solo career going. A lot of people were telling him, particularly Tony DeFries of Main Man Records, which was Bowie's label, Bowie's management. They were telling Ronson, "You could be the next Bowie. Okay, you're amazing." Okay, and they were pissing in his ear a little bit, which I think, in the end, it hurt him because Main Man would go under and Tony DeFries would, there'd be a lot of, I mean, I don't think Ronson was just a regular dude. And I don't think he realized, you know, he wasn't really getting paid that well. Okay. But they were also telling him you could be the biggest star. Okay. So his next album, Bowie's next album, Aladdin Sane, you could hear his Ronson's guitar work on there. And also the 1973 album, Pinups, which is the covers album. However, the album after that, called Diamond Dogs, released in May of 74, Ronson's not on, okay? And a lot of it had to do with Bowie wanting to go in a different direction, and also there was some back and forth with the Spiders, you know, asking for more money and kind of like miscommunications between Bowie and the band and Tony DeFries, and he just was left. They were left off that album. Okay, I always felt that it's a good album, but it could have been better if Ronson was on it. That's how I feel about Diamond Dogs. Now, the last time he played with Bowie was the famous Bowie farewell concert in 1973, where he says, you know, at the end of the show, "This is my last show ever," and I'm, you know, and the media went nuts with headlines, Bowie quits music, you know, all that stuff. Obviously wasn't true. But Now after that, he would release three solo albums in time, Ronson. Okay. The debut album called Slaughter on 10th Avenue, which featured a fantastic cover of Elvis's Love Me Tender, reached number 9 on the UK album charts. His most famous solo track, Only After Dark, is on this album as well. His sister, Maggie, appears on backing vocals on this album as well. And it was between Slaughter and 10th Avenue in 74 and the 75 solo album Play After Dark that Ronson had a short stint in Mott the Hoople, the band. Okay. Mm-hmm. Ariel Bender, I believe, had left the band and he replaced him. And this was at the time... Mott the Hoople was kind of disintegrating. It would be, I think, only a couple of months that he was in the band. It was right after they had recorded the live album that they recorded in America. And Ronson came in and there was kind of some animosity with, I mean, Ian Hunter wanted him in the band. But Ian was starting to not get along with these other guys. I think they felt by having Ronson in the band, it was too much of a, you know, a spotlight on him. I think they wanted more attention because Hunter had all the spotlight. But now you got two guys with the spotlight, so it pushed them even further back. So they kind of resented him being in the band. Plus, he was on I don't remember if he was on Epic, I think, at that time, or if he was still on Main Man. I don't remember Ronson. But, you know, and they were on Columbia, Mata Hoople. So what would happen is at gigs, a limo would come for Ronson from his record label and not the other guys. And they would be in a separate limo. So it was just a bad mishmash happening. Yeah, I mean, it just didn't look good. They didn't look like a band, and it didn't work out. So what would happen is Hunter in 1975 would take Ronson with him and begin a solo career, okay? And he would work on his first solo album, which is just called Ian Hunter, okay? And it has the famous top 20 UK song, Once Bitten, Twice Shy,
yeah.
Okay, that came out. And he toured successfully with Hunter that year as well. And, you know, it began another era in his career playing with this other guy. Hunter was not Bowie, but he's a fantastic songwriter in himself. Now, he had recorded the Annette Peacock song, I'm the One, for Slaughter on 10th Avenue, that album. And in return, he played on tracks for her release on the album X Dreams. In 76, Ronson contributed guitar to the title track on David Cassidy's Getting It in the Street. And on February 11th, 1977, the single Billy Porter, backed with 7 Days, was released on RCA Victor. That was a solo single. Unfortunately, it flopped. Now, Roger Daltrey, who admired Ronson a lot, used him on his 1977 solo effort, One of the Boys. In 78, punk band Slaughter and the Dogs employed Ronson on 2 tracks for their album, Do It Dog Style, one of my favorites. Do It Dog Style.
That's pretty funny.
In 1979, Ronson and Ian Hunter appeared on and produced Ellen Foley's debut album called Night Out, which had 2 hits, one called We Belong to the Night and What's the Matter, Baby. Very kind of like singer-songwriter kind of stuff, you know, orchestral a bit, okay? Not bad, okay? So he also played guitar on Roger C. Real's Reptiles in Motion album. It was recorded in 1979, but unfortunately that was never released for 40 years. Okay, 2019, okay, it would come out. Because the label, Big Sound, based in Connecticut, went bankrupt. Oh, and Roger C. Reels couldn't get the masters until 2019 to put it out. So in 1992, Ronson worked with, of all people, John Mellencamp on his album American Fool. Okay, a lot of people don't know about Ronson's influence on this album, and he gets a credit, okay?
Oh yeah,
on the record, okay. One song in particular that everybody knows, Jack and Diane.
Yeah,
okay, that was a huge hit for John Mellencamp, who was known as, what was he, John Cougar then, or John Cougar Mellencamp at that? I think he was just John Cougar.
John Cougar Mellencamp.
Wasn't he just John Cougar?
No, it was John Cougar Mellencamp. I think when that came out, they changed it. Now he's just John Mellencamp.
No, I think the order of it was when he first came out, the first like 2 albums or something, is just John Cougar. Then he became John Cougar Mellencamp. Then he became John Mellencamp. I think that's if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. So I think if you go look at an American Fool album, I think it says John Cougar. Okay. But this song was a huge number one hit. Okay. Now, the overall sound of that song with the let it rock, let it roll, like a choir. Okay. That was all Ronson's idea.
Oh, shit.
Okay. That catchy chorus part. Okay. Was Ronson's idea. Now, Mellencamp gives Ronson credit for developing that song even to this day. It did go to number one, and so did the album. Okay, the song and the album went to number one. So Ronson, after that, would tour briefly with Midge Ure's band in 1985. But unfortunately, that fell apart because he had some financial disagreements with Midge. In 1990, he collaborated with Ian Hunter again on his album, Yui Orta. This time giving a writing credit under the name of Hunter Ronson, finally got a writing credit with Ian. In 93, he appeared on Bowie's Black Tie, White Noise album. Very interesting record. He did a cover of the Cream song, I Feel Free, which is a song that they used to do live like 20 years earlier on some live shows. Bowie would do that song, but they never recorded it before. He also played on a Morrissey-penned song called I Know It's Gonna Happen Someday. Now, Ronson's third album, called Heaven and Hull, would be released after his death. It was an album that he had been working on, okay? It featured many artists, Bowie, John Mellencamp, Ian Hunter, Joe Elliott from Def Leppard, Chrissie Hynde, okay, is on it. But sadly, Mick Ronson wouldn't see that album released in his lifetime. Okay. He passed away April 29th, 1993 of liver cancer at the age of 46. What got to me when I watched that documentary called Beside Bowie, the Mick Ronson story, okay, is just how, you know, how he acted. I mean, when he found out he had liver cancer, he was having pain. Somebody was just nice enough. He didn't have a lot of money. I don't even know if he had medical insurance. Somebody was nice enough to do a couple of like MRI type X-ray things on him. And his sister explains this in the documentary. It's a very moving scene about how three tumors are discovered on his liver. And it turns out it, when they looked at it further, it was like an inoperable type of cancer. They gave him 3 months to live. He lived 20 months. Okay. And whenever he was feeling well in those years, those 20 months, you know, unfortunately, when you have that type of inoperable cancer, all they really give you is morphine for the pain. You know, there's not much they can do. So, yeah. This is also 30 years ago. Things have advanced a little bit more now, but but still, I mean, he was dealing with a lot of pain, and the way his sister explains it in the documentary, which I loved, was how he would, and Ian Hunter says it too, when he's interviewed, how if he was feeling well, he'd call up people all day. He'd talk to people all day on the phone. How you doing? Whatever, you know, he kept in touch with Hunter and all that right to the very end. Sadly, April 29th, 1993, he would pass away at the age of 46. Now, on May 6th, right after that, his funeral was held in a Mormon chapel in London. In his memory, the Mick Ronson Memorial Stage was constructed in Queen's Gardens. That's in Hull, okay, England. In 2015, there was an effort to put forth like a new memorial. And by 2017, there was an 8-foot statue of Ronson erected and put up, okay, in Hull's East Park. And that's where Ronson worked, where the rugby field is when he was in the parks department. So there's a big 8-foot statue of him there. Yeah. And again, I can't emphasize enough to check out that 90-minute documentary. It's on YouTube.
Great.
Beside Bowie, great. The Mick Ronson Story. It came out in 2017. It actually has some narration by Bowie himself, who we know passed away in 2016. It has a lot of archival footage in it. It's definitely worth a watch if you're a fan of Ronson.
Yeah.
That's all I got, Rob. Mick Ronson story.
Man, what a life he led, man, from playing from people to people, but never really made a lot of money, which is kind of shocking when you think of all the names people he played with. I'm surprised he didn't make more money.
Yeah. I you know, there were times late in his career where he had no money at all. Okay, really. Yeah. To you know, the Morrissey song supposedly got him quite a bit of money in his final years. That was in the 80s. I think he did that late 80s. But you know, even by the time he passed away, he really didn't have that much. But you know, over the last 30 years, his, you know, he shined as an amazing guitarist. You know, people point to him as so important. And you know, in the documentary, there's a question posed, you know, would Bowie have been the same without Ronson? The answer is no. Now, Bowie was going to be Bowie. Bowie would have been a huge star, even if he never knew Ronson, but because he just had that. But he wouldn't have been the same David Bowie, that's for sure. So definitely, you know, if you love Bowie, you got to love Ronson too.
Yeah. All right, man. What a wonderful show. So, Mike, how can people reach out to you?
Okay. I'm on Facebook as Rocco Mike. And check out the Rock Show Podcast group page on Facebook as well. Subscribe, post music, whatever you like. We have a lot going on there. Also, I'm on Instagram as RockerMike212, Twitter as RockerMike212. I'm also on MeWe, Clout Hub, Getter, Truth Social as RockerMike. Just Google RockerMike, you'll find me somewhere. How about you, Rob?
Yeah. Me, you can find me, especially in the group page. You can send me a note. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under Getting Lumped Up. And for that, people, have a good one, and we'll see you next week. And remember, don't get drunk.
Get lumped up.
I want to get lumped up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and Young Rock come on. On the only podcast that I'll hear, that won't make me wanna rip off my ear.